Hey, 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 fellow ninjas. It's Mark Sams here, one of the co-founders from Ninja Outreach. And today, we're doing what we do best. We're doing our podcast. It's the Ninja Outreach podcast. And we've got another really cool guest for you. His name is Tom Hunt. And we're going to be talking about how he started his business, how things developed for him. We're going to be talking about something which is near and dear to my heart, which is outsourcing, working with VAs and remote staff and how important that can be to building your business. So without no further ado, hey Tom, how you doing?
Mark, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm actually, my history with Ninja Outreach goes back like a year and a half. Wow. And I've used it for months on end. And we can even talk about that in this call, right? Like how much time it saved me, like building the various online businesses that I've built. So yeah, I'm looking forward to this chat.
That's super cool. So before we talk about anything Ninja Outreach related, I want to get a bit into your background information and know a bit more about, like, obviously, like, you're an online entrepreneur now, right? And
yes.
But before you started all of this online stuff, like, what was you doing?
Great question. So up until I was 22, I followed the path that was set out for me, like the well-being path. So I studied at university, I studied chemistry, and then I went to work for the large corporations in the city of London, like Ernst & Young and Accenture, purely because, like, that's what my brother did, that's what my mum wanted me to do, and that's what all of my colleagues at university were doing. Mm-hmm. But then something strange happened, and me and my friend started an e-commerce store that's selling male leggings purely because we wanted to have a market stall on Brick Lane Market to speak to the girls there. We would go there every Sunday because we lived close, but would never ever talk to all the pretty girls. So we're like, if we had a market stall, surely we'd be able to talk to the pretty girls.
Yeah.
So we did this. We bought female leggings from eBay, like drew on our brand to make them male, and then had 18 pairs on sale at this market in Brick Lane at the end of 2012. Guess how many we sold out to 18 in 8 hours on the market?
I don't know if I would buy leggings, but like it's different strokes for different folks, right? So
true.
I don't know. How many did you have, first of all, to sell?
So we had 18 pairs.
I would assume you sold all of them.
We sold zero pairs.
Oh wow.
And I don't even think that we were that successful. I don't think we even spoke to many ladies either. So like that could be seen as a failure, but it was still fun, right?
Yeah.
So we decided to persevere and actually designed some male leggings, got them produced in Shanghai, shipped over, and then created an e-commerce store and a brand around these male leggings. And so this was 4 years ago now, but the turning point for me was when we sold our first pair of male leggings to someone like a stranger, someone that we didn't know, in March 2013. And I sort of got hooked on the, oh, you can help people and get paid for it and have fun at the same time. Mm-hmm. So really, for the last 4 years, I've just been spending a disproportionate amount of my time on learning this whole entrepreneur, online business, online marketing, building business system thing, until we get to the point today here where I'm able to come and speak to you and potentially help your audience with some of the experience and knowledge that I've developed.
Cool. So tell me a bit, like you said that like you spent like a disproportionate amount of your time learning loads of different stuff. Talk to me about that journey. Like, how do you feel like you developed until the point of where you sort of thought was like, oh, I get it. Like, this is what I need to do. I need to do this. I need to do that. And like, what sort of things were you studying? How was you getting that information? Like, what were some of the downfalls of like, did you get wrong information to start off with? Did, like, mm-hmm. yeah, give me a bit of an overview of how that sort of progressed.
The process. So the first thing I would say is that I don't think anybody is ever like there. No one finishes, right? Like the whole journey will keep on going. You have to learn to love the journey, right? Which I'm sure you resonate with. But in terms of how I started off, I think when you first start, and to like break down exactly what I've learned, or the majority of my time is spent learning online marketing, right? Because this is crucial starting any online business. And when I first started, I paid money to people that maybe were not the people that I should have been paying money to, or were not the right kind of people I needed to learn from. So
I'm with you. I've done it. I feel like it's a rite of passage, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you have to spend money on the people that are maybe not the right people. But then after that, you start understanding more about what you need to learn, the best types of people to learn from, and then you make more intelligent investment decisions with both your time and your money. So mm-hmm. where was I getting the information from? So I started out paying people that may not be the best people, but then I started meeting people that were actually like better people to learn from. So that for me was the best resource, is actually getting around people that were doing the things that I wanted to do. And it just like being around them, you would learn, and then you can ask them questions, and if they liked you, then they'd be happy to help you out. Mm-hmm. So that's probably the best resource. The rest of my learning, yeah, it's from purchasing online courses, but not just throwing money around, like understanding which online courses have been created by people that have done the things that you actually want to do, and then investing intelligently. And then once you've invested financially, then you have to invest with your time and effort in order to get the ROI on the course that you've just purchased.
Definitely, definitely. So many people that buy courses, softwares, all types of different things, and they just don't even implement. Like, I feel like they get it and they feel like, well, my job is done.
Yeah, they think that because they spent the money, now like the knowledge has automatically been absorbed into their brain.
if only it was that easy.
Yeah, it's like, I was watching The Matrix recently, and they to get trained for a skill in The Matrix, they just have to sit down, and the computer guy like downloads the program into their brain, and they wake up and have it.
Cool. That'd be so cool if that was reality, man. Oh dear. Yeah, all right. So I guess let's lead me up into, like, am I correct in saying that your main project that you're working on at the moment is virtual valley? Is that right?
It's yes and no. So the main project for the last year of my life has been virtual valley. But now we've sort of transitioned onto the next iteration of that business. But I'll talk about that in a second. What I'll do though quickly, I think this will be useful for people listening, is very briefly outline the journey from like the corporate world to building the thing after Virtual Valley and the rationale behind it.
Yeah, let's do that.
So in the corporate world, I was project managing large outsourcing contracts. We sold that pair of male leggings. I was like, I need to leave this. How can I add value to clients in London? That's where I was living, that I like, so that I could build up a salary to replace what I was currently earning. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to work with startups because I think that's cool. And so I took my outsourcing experience and I built a small team in the Philippines and then connected startups in London with that small team in the Philippines. And I was like the middleman. Mm-hmm. And so it was a valuable service because startups couldn't necessarily afford like a marketing support person in London. But what was interesting, we built this business to 6 clients just by like cold emailing startups. And then when I left the corporate world, because I had the salary to replace it, I realized I just built myself another job because I was heavily involved in every client that we were working with. Mm. So I then at this time I was reading like The E-Myth Revisited and Work the System by Sam Carpenter.
Yeah.
Great books, right? And then I was like, okay, I need to actually become an entrepreneur. So I thought, let's take this service business and let's try and automate and reduce the margin and then like implement the marketplace model so that, yeah, we'd have low margin, but the business would be infinitely more scalable because I wouldn't be involved in the day-to-day interactions with the clients. Mm-hmm. So that gave me the idea for Virtual Valley. Spent far too long developing the product. I actually wrote a guest blog post on Ninja Outreach about how to outsource the development of your software business.
That done really well.
Yeah, it's a good post, right? Yeah. So that was just like everything that I had to do to build an online marketplace with outsource development team. Anyway, so I spent 6 months, which is far too long, launched Virtual Valley at the start of 2016, this year. And then for the whole up of 2016, or for the first 6 months of 2016, I was just like all day, every day, marketing Virtual Valley through content, social media, and SEO to start growing that platform. Mm-hmm. And that almost brings us up to today. So this was July. Actually, a bit earlier than that, in April.
Can I interject just for a second?
Yeah, jump in.
Because, like, you know when you say marketing, social media, and so on and so forth? Give me some insight, like,
what were you doing?
What sort of stuff was you doing? What did you find effective? What did you find didn't work? What were some of your findings and learnings?
Yes, cool. So very briefly outline the strategy. So there was phase 1 and phase 2 of the strategy, the marketing strategy. So Because I wasn't completely happy with the platform, phase one was designed just to bring in a trickle of clients or entrepreneurs to get their feedback and then improve. And then phase two was about scaling. So that was about partnerships, Facebook ads, referral programs. That was phase two. But phase one was so building a media company out of Virtual Valley. So we had a podcast and we had a blog, but then also leveraging other people's audiences by collaborating with them on pieces of content. For example, guest blog posts like we've done with Ninja Outreach, and getting people on my podcast and speaking on other people's podcasts. So what worked? So I did 47 guest blog posts in 3 months, and it's quite hard to say whether that worked or not.
How many?
Yes, 47.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So it was like one guest blog post every day.
Yeah.
But the quality of the blogs range from like very small ones at the start to like Ninja Outreach and HubSpot, right? So, when asking the question, did that work or not? It's quite hard to tell at the moment because yes, we got links, yes, we got some traffic, yes, it brought some clients, but for the amount of time invested, probably not worth it. But what is really important, and this is what I would really encourage anybody to think about when they're embarking on a content promotion or collaboration plan, is to understand the relationships that you develop, right? So now I have good relationships, I hope, with the 47 people that I posted guest blog posts on. Mm-hmm. In the future, we could potentially reach out, they could become partners, we could do a webinar and split the revenue that Virtual Valley creates, right? So
100%,
at the moment, it's hard to say whether that worked or not, but I think the relationship equity, you could say, that I built was definitely worth it. So I would recommend people doing that. I had a virtual assistant spending an hour on Twitter pretty much every day this year, and I haven't tracked any clients that directly from Twitter. Yes, it makes us look good because we're sharing content, we have a lot of followers, but in terms of direct ROI, it's hard to say. So maybe I would, or maybe we just weren't doing Twitter right. So that's just one learning for people to be aware of.
Yeah. Cool. So, like, with the guest blog posts and stuff, like, we did, I think for over a year, we did about 170 guest blog posts, maybe like 10, just over 10 a month. And
You had people in your team writing those?
Say that again?
Were you writing those, or you had people in your team
So when we first started, what it was is we read a post by Buffer, and they said they did 150 guest blog posts in a year. They got like over 100,000 users, and we thought, well, let's try this out. So we basically, I done the outreach, finding the people, Dave done the content. This was like in the early days, we didn't have that many staff or anything like that to start off with.
And
we pretty much just went hell for leather at it. Just like every day, I was just finding new people, getting Dave opportunities, and we were just going at it. And I have to be honest, like to start off with, the results wasn't that amazing. Like the first month, 2 months, like I didn't feel like I got a bit of traffic, got a bit of sales, just like what you were saying, and so on and so forth. But where I found that the real benefit was from the long term aspect of it, because what happened was is that I'd say around sort of like month six, month seven, and we put our blinders on and didn't stop doing it. And the reason why we did that is because we actually got some advice from Neil Patel, and he said to us that, like, just get on with it, just do it. Like, he goes, a month, 2 months is not enough to know. He goes, you've got to be doing it like at least 6 months to 9 months to really get a good feel for it. So we thought, let's just stay true to it. And we did. And like at around sort of like 6-7 months, I remember I was on Google Analytics, and I saw traffic coming from Forbes. And I was like, what? Why are we getting traffic from Forbes? Like, we haven't done the guest post over there. And somebody who must have seen one of our guest blog posts or seen us, because we were creating that sort of be everywhere effect, had sort of associated us as the authority when it comes to outreach and so on and so forth, and had linked to us around micro-influencers and from an article from Forbes. Then that happened again, like maybe a month and a half later, from somebody else. Huffington Post, we got something happen, Shopify, Moz, and so, the first three months and stuff like that, is like, it's really, you're just setting that foundation, and I really do believe that, like, it's something that you do need to do consistently for anything from 9 months to 12 months, and even though it's like one of those things of where the benefits of it is deferred. Like, you don't get it straight away.
Yeah.
You don't get it straight away. But we definitely saw a benefit from doing guest blog posting. And we've noticed like a lot of more inbound inquiries just with partnerships and different things of like people wanting us to be part of like marketing roundups and toolkits and all this and bundles and stuff like that. I think because we were doing all of that, it helped us with like when we got the opportunity with AppSumo and stuff like that. But yeah, anyway, I just wanted to just throw that in there because
yeah,
I think that's super important that like it's one of those things of where you kind of need to just keep at it and not be looking for the results straight away, and that's very hard for some people to do. But yeah,
yes, very much so. If almost like you were adding so much value to like the online influencer marketing community that you were repaid by these amazing.
In a sense, it sounds cliche, but that's actually how it occurred, and like, yeah, I can definitely attest to that.
So it looks like I should have
get back on it. Like, you know, you might have been like just around the corner from really sort of like,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And yeah. I understand why people stop. I completely get it. I completely understand that.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So we've got virtual value.
Yeah.
Running,
yeah.
And.
Yeah.
What's happening next?
Yeah, so what happened with Virtual Valley is I noticed something with the entrepreneurs that they would come on, and even though, so the difference between Virtual Valley and Upwork is we had a curated database of virtual assistants, like the functionality was the same. And the reason we did that is because I went to Upwork and I spent too long trying to find people, and then they're rubbish. So
yeah,
what I noticed with Virtual Valley is entrepreneurs were coming to the platform and they were still spending too much time trying to find the right virtual assistant. And then they're also not good at or didn't like managing the virtual assistant. So I had an idea when I was speaking to an advisor about potentially creating like an admin black hole that you could just throw tasks into and they would get done and you wouldn't have to recruit or manage people. So this gave us the idea to build a Slack bot, or well, she's a robot, but her first integration is Slack, called Tina, who you can speak to in various collaboration tools in the future, and she would understand the task, she would delegate that to a human, the human would do it, and they'd pass it back through the Tina conversational interface. So this, if we had the idea and we launched an MVP in 3 weeks. So first learning there is, if you compare the Virtual Valley MVP, which was not 6 months, mm-hmm. and the Tina MVP, which was 3 weeks, like massive disparity there, right?
Definitely.
And we actually, within the first 2 weeks of launching Tina, got four paying monthly subscribers for $197 a month, which was not as much as Virtual Valley was making, but definitely more than Virtual Valley made in its first month.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really a side project. And then we had an investment company in New York reach out being like, let's have a chat. Like, you might have something here. And then that sort of, yeah, I realized we could potentially build something. This was in April.
Oh, wow.
It was cool, right? So there was then these two projects. Like, that became more serious. It's like, okay, if we can raise money, we can, like, me and a partner can go full-time on Tina and, like, build something amazing. So that was April. And then fast forward 4 months to August, and we have investment for Tina. Me and my partner will be going full-time or near full-time on Tina, and Virtual Valley is being... Well, 90% of it is being handed over to another company. I'm going to retain a 10% stake and continue to promote it. But the running of the business will be handed over to another company so I can focus on Tina.
That's super cool. Like, that's kind of like fate then, because we were supposed to have like an interview like months and months ago, and it always got delayed. And it's like, it's kind of fate that we've kind of come in just at the right time to be able to sort of see the evolution of where you've gone.
Yeah,
that's really cool. So what this is the section of the interview where what I like to do is I want to give some actionable advice and insight to the audience. So
yeah,
I've got a couple of little topics that I'd like to talk about, and since like you're the outsourcing specialist, let's talk about outsourcing. So
yes,
I'm sold on outsourcing. I'm sold on having a remote team. Like, as you can imagine, like, all of my team is remote. I'm sitting in my bedroom right now, working with my laptop and so on and so forth. So, like, I'm sold on that. But for people that may be just starting out, they're still like a one-man band, and they're starting to get to that capacity, or they're looking at like, how do I start getting into outsourcing? First of all, give me the main benefits of outsourcing and working with VAs and stuff like that.
Yes. Okay. So I think we'll go back to the E-Myth Revisited,
okay.
Right? And he basically says that people that, there are three different roles in any business. Like the technician, the person baking the cakes, the manager who's managing the person baking the cakes, and the entrepreneur who's like sits above the system and like hires the manager.
Yeah.
So if you think about any business that's ever really occurred, the successful ones have an entrepreneur at the top, who spends the majority of his time doing the entrepreneurial tasks and will only jump down to do technical or management tasks when really required. And this is how you disconnect the amount of time you spend with the amount of value you can create and money that you make, right? So what a virtual assistant allows online business people to do is make that shift from technician and manager to entrepreneur faster, purely because the investment required to get someone who is good and experienced in an online business is so much lower. So you can hire someone full time for $600 a month who has experience in online business, compared to hiring someone in London for like £1,500, right? So
that's on the cheap end.
That's on the cheap end, right? Yeah. So to summarize, if you're going to create an effective business system that is disconnected from the amount of time you spend, like the amount of value you create is disconnected from the amount of time you spend, you need to shift your time into the manager or the entrepreneur. And a virtual assistant is basically allows you to do this faster, which I believe allows you to grow your business system and explode the amount of value you create faster.
Cool. Now that's good. That's good. That's good advice. All right. So let's talk about like tactics from the point of view of like hiring and onboarding. Like,
yeah.
So I guess the process of finding a good person, because everybody's heard about the nightmare situations of where you try to outsource and you get somebody crap, and it's just like, what is the best way of getting the right person, potentially using your platform. But also just from us, like bring that in as well. But also, like, if somebody was just going out and hiring somebody, what are some cool little tips for them? And onboarding as well, like bringing that person into the company, like getting them up to date with what's going on, like any sort of processes and tips around that as well.
Yeah, sure. So obviously, Virtual Valley had the curated database, right? So I had to, or me and my manager had to go through and hire 83 virtual assistants. So we had to define a process, which is this five-step recruitment process that I'm going to quickly go through now. We also, I wrote up the whole thing on our blog, so we can link that at the bottom. But so you have to think of it like a sales funnel, right? Okay. So as well as getting the right people through, you also have to minimize the amount of time you spend on the wrong people.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, let's jump into step one, which is purely screening the CV. And you should be able to do that in 5 to 10 minutes. And before you invest any more time on that candidate, you can move to step two, which is a test task. So you automatically, after they've completed the test task, which is just like the task basically that they'll be completing for you, but make sure you're very specific in your instructions with this test task. An example I'll just bring off the top of my head now is, go and find me a list of 10 different people that would be potential clients, put them in a spreadsheet with their name, website, email address, format it nicely, and make sure the top row in the spreadsheet is pink, right? Yeah. So you're being specific, because one of the most important characteristics of a virtual assistant, in my opinion, and well, in Virtual Valley's opinion, is that they have a great attention to detail.
Oh my gosh.
So after step one and step two, you've invested 5 to 10 minutes, but you have a very, very good idea already of whether you should get rid of them, or you should move them to the further, more time intensive steps. So then you can move on to step three, which we did it was an interview purely based to understand if they had the experience. So it was with my manager. He spent 15 minutes going through their experience, asking them the best question we ask. This comes from a book called Top Grading. Mm-hmm. It's called the Truth Theorem question. So you go through all their previous experience, and then you ask the question, if I was to speak to your boss right now, what would your previous boss right now in that specific job, what would he say about you? And okay. They would say, yeah, like he thinks I'm really honest and hardworking. And then after that, you say, okay, cool. Would you be happy to connect us so we can get a reference? Mm-hmm. And then if they say, yes, that's fine, then you know they're good. If they say no, then they're potentially not an A player, as he says in the book. Mm-hmm. So that's step three. Step four is more if to understand whether they have the personality. So this was with me, and it was more just like a chat to understand if they have the right sort of outlook on life and mindset that I believe is crucial for a virtual assistant. That is step four. And then I can't remember step five, or maybe I've missed one out, but it's going to be in the blog post that we send over. So that is the process that we use. And that's the process that I recommend anybody taking if they go to onlinejobs.ph, which is an awesome resource, or if they go to Upwork or one of the other larger freelancer marketplaces. Mm. So that's recruitment. Now, you also asked about onboarding. And the best book for this, I mentioned earlier, is Work the System by Sam Carpenter. Basically, the whole book, I'll summarize it in like two lines, is he has a hectic outbound sales phone calling telemarketing business. Yeah. And then he starts building a system and documenting every single process in the business. And then after like 2 years, the business is amazing. Like, it's running without him. His life is amazing. Like, that's how you can sum up the book. So what we did with Virtual Valley is, well, not actually for Virtual Valley, but what I did when I've hired other VAs for other businesses is I made sure that everything that they would do is fully documented by either the previous VA or myself with like screenshots, videos. So everything they need to do is there. So when the new VA joins, yes, you need to do the onboarding, like explaining them about the company and about the mission and like giving them some information to learn. But all you really need to do is share that folder in Google Drive with them, get them to go through the processes and then get them to ask you any questions.
Yeah.
And then you watch them going through the processes on screen share and then like fix anything and then you're done. So that's a very efficient way to onboard.
Very efficient. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right. So let's get into like being a remote team. It's not the same as that everybody coming into an office. So, We've had to think about this and we've thought of some innovative ways, but I'd love to get your take on, like, keeping the team together and, like, company culture, like, what tools, resources can you use and how do you go about that? Because I obviously, if you're building a real business, you're not just having some of these outsourcers just for a week or a month and so on and so forth. Like, these people could be – we've got outsourcers that have been with us for almost 2 years and so like now. Mm-hmm. So, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So they're becoming part of
that. Yeah, so a few tips. Yeah. Okay, so – the first one, probably the most crucial, is that you just need to meet people face to face once. Like when I worked at Accenture, I worked with a girl in India for a year and we were effective together. But then I went to India and met her. Then after that, like our productivity just skyrocketed. And then my manager for Virtual Valley, we worked together for a year. And then in April, I went to Philippines and stayed in his family home. Yeah. And after that, like now we're just like the connection is so much stronger and I just trust him so much more. So step number one is just somehow find a way to meet them in person once and the productivity your gains will far surpass the airplane ticket that you've had to invest in. Okay. Plus it's like a holiday, right? So especially going to the Philippines. So that's number one. Number two is have regular video calls, whether that's daily, whether that's weekly. That definitely helps with building the relationship and making sure everybody's like, feel like, because you have calls with the team, you can really build that team spirit by doing that. Mm-hmm. The third, and this has been a game changer, is using Slack because the amount of customization you can do in Slack and the amount of silly little things you can do and silly conversations you can have, I think has really changed the effectiveness of every remote team that I've been a part of. I'm not sure do you guys use Slack for Ninja Outreach?
We use Glip, which is very similar to Slack.
Okay, cool. But I'm part of another remote team that I'm sort of, I guess, an advisor to the business, but like So I'm going to quickly just bring out, like, to make this a bit more tangible, like, bring out the stuff that we do that makes us feel like more of a team.
Yeah.
So every day, like, in the general channel, which is like the main channel everybody has access to, like, in the morning, a quote is posted.
Okay.
And we're asked to, like, give our thoughts on what this quote means to us. So I'll give the quote for this morning. So it says, filling your sails with gratitude is the most joyous way to journey down the river of life. And so this has been input by, like, our technical guy. He's, like, just got a list of quotes, and they're automatically posted in the general channel, so everyone, like, can comment on them and say what it means to them. It makes you feel more like a team. We have auto, whenever we make a sale, that is automatically posted in one of the, like, the sales channels, so everybody can, like, celebrate that together, and the salesperson is, like, tagged, and you can ask them about a sale. If stuff like that, like these team bonding pieces of information that you can bond over, which have had a massive effect on team spirit within virtual teams.
No, that's really cool. That's really cool. And, like, that's something that I can definitely implement without a doubt. Like, we have, like, a water cooler team where basically everybody can access. We've just started this part of it where we do, like, an employee interview, loads of different questions that ask personal things about the employee and stuff like that. And everybody posts one up each week. And
is that just internal content, or do you share that with the world?
This is just internal.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's really awesome, man. Like,
yeah, so it's just internal. So like we just had one posted up by our designer guy this week. And, like, you find out really cool things. Like, so Dave, Dave, for example, who would have thought he does stand-up comedy? Like, there's other people that have done, like, do yoga, that are vegans, that just different things that you never get to talk about normally, and it brings a different element of understanding that person, where now me and one of my team members who wasn't really that connected that well, like, we only chat when I needed to ask him to do something. We now play chess online all the time. Like, do you know what I mean? Dope. And it's things like that really sort of, like, help bring a remote team together. So
you have to, like, I think I know why this works, because it sort of shows you that they're a real person, like, that they're a real person, not just this...
Your boss.
Yeah, your boss, or this thing on the other side of the world that helps you be more productive. Like, when you understand these people are real people, then you can bond and build awesome real personal relationships and work together effectively, right?
Yeah, no. It's like, getting Glip, which is very similar to Slack, like, I have no preference between the two. We just end up using Glip. Like, it was a game changer for the business. Like, I remember the day that they brought it in and we put it all together. And I think because he'd read an article on something and he ended up putting it together. And, like, it was a game changer for the business because it was just a place for everybody to all chat and speak and so on and so forth. Like, we've taken a little step further now. Like, we've done things like where, obviously, if you do a certain amount of hours a week and so on and so forth, we do, like, a perk system where...
I think it's like
$25, $30 a month, and you can use it for pretty much anything that is going to develop you. So if you wanted to go to, like, a gym membership, right, or towards a gym membership, if it's, like, for a monitor for your computer, books, anything that's really sort of around developing you and making you a better employee, like, you can get access to it for that. And say that, for example, it was something where it was like a couple of hundred quid that you was paying, you could pay that up front and then use the benefits to pay it off on a monthly basis type of thing. Plus, we do paid holidays.
That's nice.
And obviously you have to work, a certain amount of hours and so on and so forth. And you can accrue, like your first year, you can accrue up to 5 days paid, then 15, then, you know, then 10, then 15, and stuff like that. And it just makes everybody feel like they're part of something, and it's not just like a project that you're going to get cut next week or anything like that.
Yeah, like, I totally agree. And this is, like, employment of the future. It's not like you have to go to this great office in the, like, in the middle of the city where, like, no one knows who you are and no one likes you. Like, this is, like, the future. How many people do you have?
We've got 11 people. I think 12. I think now. Yeah, so
that's awesome. Yeah, like, all full time or some, like?
All full time. Yeah, all full time. Like that is that. Yeah, like, some people don't get up to, like, their 30, 40 hours, but, like, they've there's enough work to make everybody full time, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, and how long since Ninja Reach was first launched? Like 3-4 years?
No, not even. Like, we opened our shopping cart on January 15th, 2015. That's when we opened our shopping cart.
Oh, wow.
And I'd say about 6 months before that, we were in, like, the beta development stage of the platform.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, like, I took 6 months to 8 months before that. So, 8 months we were constructing and putting everything together, like about 6 months before it, we started opening it up to betas and stuff like that, and then we opened our shopping cart on January 15th, 2015.
Yeah,
which is pretty cool. Like, so it's not been that long.
No, it hasn't. I thought it was
maybe
longer,
two years. Yeah. It feels longer, but yeah, maybe 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Well, one thing I'd like to add is, if we go back to what I was saying about why you should hire a virtual assistant, is because you can get other people to do that technical and management work, right? So you can do the more strategic entrepreneurial work. But what's happening now is that software is even taking up some of the technical work, and then the virtual assistant would do more of the management task, and you can do more of the entrepreneurial task. So software like Ninja Outreach, and this is what I wanted to talk about, is that when I started using Ninja Outreach, I like mastered it myself. Documented the process as we discussed, and then I gave it to my virtual assistant, and it just made my virtual assistant, it like probably saved, I don't know, like 1 to 2 hours a day where he wouldn't have to do some of the technical work, so he could then either manage people more effectively or do other technical work. So if we think of the spectrum from technical to management to entrepreneurial work, yes, give away the technical work to a virtual assistant, but also find software that can enhance or augment your virtual assistant. So actually, in like 5 years' time, all of the technical work can be done by software. The virtual assistant can be the manager, and then you can sit at the top of the system just tweaking stuff or jumping down and doing technical work if you want to do that. Definitely. So that's why I think the value in all these SaaS companies is that they're just taking up the work that and doing it better than people that we were doing 5 years ago.
Yeah, no, it's so true. Like, I feel like we spend at least $1,000 or maybe a little bit more on just tools, from analytical tools to tools that help us run the business more effectively. Like, 100%. And like, all the staff are like, who are in different positions are well versed on different things. And like, obviously the coders, they're using different softwares and so on and so forth to help them code and stuff like that. It's definitely like, it's definitely the way forward, without a doubt.
And the reason you're spending that $1,000 is because you're getting the positive ROI, right? Like,
of course.
If you're saving your coder like 10 hours a month, he's able to bring in that new feature that your users are going to love.
Exactly.
Stop churn,
exactly. Like, I think we use a platform called Intercom. And
That's amazing, right?
And it's like, it just does amazing things, like from a point of view of just like allowing us to interact with a client on it's just on a level, in a way that it's just more personable than just a normal support desk. Do you know what I mean? And you can also look at things like behavior that's going on with clients, like what things they're doing, and pop up advice as they're doing stuff and stuff like that.
Yeah, like timely chat pop-ups, right? Like when they're staying on the sales page for too long, you're like, you just pop up, be like, can I answer any questions? And they're like,
exactly,
this one question, and then they buy, you're like, yes.
Exactly. So tell me more, a little bit more about this automated bot assistant.
Yeah.
This just sounds super cool. And I feel like it kind of sounds like AI type of stuff.
Yes, right. So, I'll give you the big picture first, and then I'll go into a little bit more detail. But if you think about what Uber do, they have an amazing system for understanding requirements, like where you are, where you want to go, and then they delegate that to a human. And what Tina does, or Tina version 2, who's live now, does is understands the task, delegates that to an assistant intelligently, so an assistant who has skills in that task, who's worked with you before, who you like before, because we can analyze the text that you've sent to each other. And so Tina currently works similar to Uber. But then if you think about what Uber are doing right now, actually, is they're now no longer delegating to humans. They're going to have computers do the actual tasks, so with driverless cars. And the dream that we've really sold, or what we are going to, what we plan to do with Tina, is actually have her do all of these basic admin tasks herself. Now, this is probably going to take a couple of years, but it will enable us to move from that market, intelligent marketplace model to a SaaS company. And obviously, you can enjoy the margins that SaaS companies enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So that's the big picture. But what I think is interesting about what she does at the moment is she uses what we're calling intelligent selection. So you can go to Upwork and you can spend hours trying to find the right person who may not be actually the right person in the end. Or you can use software to understand what you're trying to get done and then intelligently select someone who can actually do that, who you've worked with before, based on just the information that you type into this chat interface. So to summarize what she is at the moment, is she's an intelligent marketplace through a chat interface. And the reason why she's through a chat interface is because we get more information we can then analyze to make that automatic intelligent selection.
I'm looking at it now and I'm thinking to myself, this could be really massive. Like, just because it's very simple. I can just see that here. All I need to do is just say, yeah, I'm looking for somebody to curate a list of growth hackers for me. And then I assume that it would ask me another question for more clarification and so on and so forth.
Are you at asktina.io on the web?
Yes, I'm on it right now.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, yeah. So the goal of that page is to get you to add her to Slack, and then you ask her for a task, and then you can have a free task, but then you need to subscribe. So what you're seeing there, and this is really interesting, is because we're trying to do the whole business through this chat interface.
Yeah.
So there's no website. There's just this. So you can ask a load of questions, and it's a landing page, right? And we're trying to get it to convert at the 40% that you can get email landing pages to convert at. But it's really hard because there's a whole infinite amount of questions that she could be asked.
Mm-hmm.
But what is good, if you ask her a question and she doesn't know the answer, I can then go into the back end and train her so that in a year when she's had 10,000 questions, she's going to be very hard to stump. And then our conversion on that landing page should hopefully increase.
That's really cool.
But, I mean, maybe we have to test it, right? Like, we're not sure if this whole chat interface for the whole business is really going to work. Like, maybe it's too early. Like, people are not used to that. They want to interact with a static web page. But we're testing it, right?
So. I don't know, though, because I feel like to myself that, like, look at Google. Like, Google's just a search bar.
It's box. Yeah, you're right.
Do you know what I mean? And, like, at the end of the day, like, if this is what you're looking for, like, maybe what might be interesting is maybe, like, in some of this white space is having, like, little snippets of information about if you're looking for this, just ask a question here. If you're looking for that,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Just to prompt people for what
exactly
they can do and stuff like that. But other than that, like, I think simple sometimes is better.
Yeah.
That's super cool.
But if you can't get the information you want, it does get frustrating. Like, Tina, no, tell me how much you cost. But yeah, she's getting better all the time. And one more thing about Tina is the reason she is we're basically building a personality, because if you trust someone, then you don't have to manage them so much, right? So you don't have to waste your time managing. So the reason I'm trying to make her into this person, and you, like, all you see everywhere is the opportunity to talk to her, is so people can build trust in her and then won't have to waste their time managing.
Super cool. All right, cool. Well, definitely delivered some amazing gems for people, like some great advice around outsourcing, onboarding, company culture, tools and resources and stuff like that. And like, when I think about my business and I think about, like, if we didn't have a team of outsourcers, we wouldn't be able to be where we are today. Like, that is literally the truth of the matter. We wouldn't be able to do what we're doing right now. If we were forced to have people within an office in the UK or in America, we just couldn't afford it. Like, we couldn't afford it either. Like, that again would be another stumbling block. So outsourcing is literally allowed us to run an effective business where we're profitable and we can grow. So to me, it's such a powerful thing. So like anybody that's thinking about doing it and so on and so forth, you really need to get into it. You really need to go and check out So what's the best way people can keep up to date with you and what you're doing and the information that you're bringing out there around working remotely and stuff like that? What's the best way? That's the best way.
I think Tom Hunt at Tom Hunt IO Twitter is like if you want to connect with me and like any questions about outsourcing virtual assistants, just go there. So at Tom Hunt IO, but then virtualvalley.io, the blog there. That's where we share like all of the information, like that whole recruitment process that we can link to. And then if you want to speak to Tina, it's just asktina.io. And so you can help us train her, like try and stump her, because then that makes her better.
Perfect. All right, great stuff. Well, Tom, thanks so much for coming on today. Like, it's been absolutely amazing. We've got a ton of great, I feel like we've added some really great value to the audience. And looking forward to having some more chats with you down the line. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else that you want, any other like last minute tips that you want to give to people before our
shut down? No, I think the final thing is be aware of opportunities that you can make your team more efficient, like especially with software, like Ninja Outreach, for example. Like, if you can get people moving up that chain of knowledge work from technician to manager, then your business, I believe, is going to grow much faster. And the final thing I'd say is I want to thank you, like Ninja Outreach, like you, Mark, and Dave, for building a tool that has made my team more efficient and, like, obviously the teams of, like, the hundreds or thousands of other customers that you have more efficient. So I really appreciate what you've done.
Yeah, we try our best. Thank you so much. All right, guys. Well, before I wrap up, like, I always like to leave with, like, a word. And the word is that this information is great. Like, it's great information, but it's completely useless if you don't take action on it. Like, 100%, like, I mean this from my heart. Like I see so many people even who purchase our tool and just have it sitting there. They're paying a recurring fee, and I can see there's no activity on the actual tool. Mm-hmm. Like, that is not what we want. We want people to actually be taking action using this stuff, because it allows you to get traffic, allows you to grow awareness around your business, like starting to build a team and starting to get that first person and so on and so forth. This stuff is crucial business building tips and stuff like that. So you guys have got to start taking action on this stuff, not just sort of listening passively, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
All right.
Totally agree.
Excellent. All right. That's it from us, the Ninja Outreach podcast. Everybody take care. Tom, I will speak to you soon.
Sure. Thank you, Mark.
No worries. Bye-bye.